You and your bright ideas.
Before we get started, I would like to thank Nancy and Nancy for coming to our community session on Sunday. I know it's difficult for staff to get away from their families on weekends, but really, really appreciated all the work that they put into it, all the work that the rest of the staff did to help beforehand to put it together. I want to thank Arlen for a very good presentation and receiving the most questions for the whole day. I was very pleased that people were that interested in the budget department. Did not expect that, so that was that was exciting. So I want to thank David over here for giving us a history of the town, and I've had some new people tell me they knew nothing at all about the history of this building, and also thank you for doing that. And I want to thank Jim and Craig for being table facilitators and controlling their groups so very well. And I want to thank Joseph for being here, because I know you probably need to be involved in that. And our hearts and prayers are with you. Now, we have a newcomer to our midst. Thank you, Jimmy, for being here today.
He's actually the smart one over at Public Works. So I know a lot of y'all are going, God, I knew there was had to be somebody. So I figured Jimmy, this time you bring Jimmy in on the phone over here, so
you are going to have so much fun today.
I'm sure. And I am proud of the truth that I told him it was breakfast in his head, and he said, okay, I'm going to
And that's why we're here, too. Okay. Why don't I just, unless anybody has any questions or comments, turn this over to Arlen.
Okay, I thought what we would do is what we've really done, the same format we've done in the last couple of years that seemed to work well. And so, assuming I turn this on, would be helpful. But so what I was going to start out with was the goals that you had set at the council retreat in February. And the thought being that as much as possible, the budget that we're going to talk about today supports these goals. There's a couple of them that maybe weren't specifically contained in the budget, but that's due to the nature of what they are. But so just run down the list very quickly. Resolution of the outstanding issues relating to the Sandman property. That over the next 2 years, resolve the stormwater issues that Sunny talked about at the February retreat. Before the end of fiscal year 2018, develop the plan, get the financing, actually construct the new fire station, and then perform the other improvements on the town hall facility. If possible, maintain the current tax rate. Work with the county, Carolina Beach, Redfield Beach, to develop a long-term coastal storm damage reduction funding plan. It's a mouthful. Number six, continue to monitor potential revenue shortfalls. Seven, complete the comprehensive plan by February 2017. And the last goal that you had set at the retreat was to address the public safety staffing during this budget process that we're starting today.
Could I make a comment? Six of these are things that we really can do and that we are very, very involved in, maybe seven. The first two, and especially the second one, we can't resolve stormwater issues. We don't work for Sunny. We can't do that. That is, to me, that is Sunny's goal. And I think maybe addressing stormwater issues in really covers one and two both, up in there, but 2 years may not be long enough to do what you were talking about doing. Maybe you can do it in 1 year. And I'd really like to see that as one of Sonny's goals and let him decide the deadline to put on it or how long he thinks it would take him to do that. And even the Salmon property, I don't know, I think that's strictly one of our goals? Or
yeah, they both are. Mm-hmm. So I think Sonny's the lead, but there's funding issues. There's issues working with HOAs that the council will have to be involved in. Sonny will do all the real work, and I agree with that. And if he thinks that that goal is written wrong, we should definitely listen to his inputs because he should help us write it properly. But both of those issues will require significant counsel, either in adjusting fees or in working with the attorney to get easements or working with HOAs to get them to realize they have responsibilities that they're not doing. So both of these are budgetary, and so they can't just go off and fix them without council support. And I think they are our goals. You know, if you want to move to the bottom and say they're on the bottom, I'm fine with that. But I don't think they should come off because there's plenty of citizens that are spun up, and council should not point them to Sonny when some of the issues are council related.
Okay, well then, you know, I would like Sonny to think about the second one and whether or not 2 years is reasonable or should it be longer or shorter. And if you want to think about that and get back with us, that's fine.
Okay, I'll think about that.
Because you seem to have, you know, several areas all over town.
And yeah, I mean, we've already taken care of two or three of them since we talked. So we're going to proceed at a fast pace to try to get these taken care of. But I'm thinking that 2 years would be plenty of time. But we may run into a snag or something. But I'm thinking 2 years is a good time.
Okay, well, why don't we leave it at that, and then next year we'll look at it. Storms and
if everything goes right next year, we'll say it's complete. And that's where my plans are.
Okay.
And I mean, you know, if council, if you get questions you want to point them to me as the council rep, I'm fine with that. But it should be. When citizens talk to us about the storm waters, my worst issue is the citizen, right? The person that lives on wherever, and this is my worst issue. We put it as one of our goals to work on that for you. So we're doing our part. Right. Now, if you don't think we're fast enough, or if you don't like our fix, fine, talk to Sonny or me about that. But the council is doing their part, right? They've put it as a priority, which is what I think council should do. And then, you know, the liaison and the department head should work on that as an issue, right? And I think it tells Sonny and me this is a priority, right? And it tells the people in Beachwalk that, hey, we're working on the Sandman issue, so it's on our list. So when they don't like what I'm saying, it's like, look, it's not just me saying this. Council's got this as work for me to do. And so that's why I like it on there, because when I get a call about it, the council's supporting funding, the department head prioritized it, we're working on it, it's on our goals. So, you know, if it's not fast enough, you're sorry, but you can fix your yard a little bit too, because you're the low part. And that's the other part. Some of the communication is negative communication, and that communication is council's communication, I think, not the department is. When you got to tell people that, no, sir, you're really wrong about your view of how this is, and it's not the town's problem, it's yours, that should come from council, I think. The department heads should be the good guys, we should be the bad guys on that. And I'm fine with being the bad guy for council. Okay, sorry.
Can we start forwarding phone calls to you?
That's just what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
He's going to start forwarding buildings.
No, I'm not your liaison. If it's water, me and Sonny are involved. I got plenty of other stuff, right?
Public safety, fire.
Sonny and I are dealing with people, unhappy people on our own, so I trust my other commissioner.
Okay.
So that was kind of me. I guess what U.S. Council had come up with as involves at the retreat. So that's just a summary of those, and yeah, I mean, any changes can be made to those. That was just at that point in time. Actually, I was just going to throw out what the, like, overriding assumptions were that, as we put together this budget. So just run through that, that there were no changes in service or level of service. This first cut of the budget assumes that everything that's asked for is included, because that's what this process is, as we go through what the departments are asking for, including any of the increased staffing that's being proposed. That there was no increase in the tax rate, and because of that, and some of the other things, especially the number two there, this budget doesn't include a contingency, and it does not include a transfer to the Beach Protection Fund. And then what we started with in regard to any compensation is a cost of living adjustment of 2% and merit of 2%. So that was kind of the starting point.
To be at that kind of
so, that, no, I didn't, let me back up. What I handed out, I didn't want to print the whole thing. I probably printed more than I needed to anyway, but I thought there were some key things that we maybe wanted, if you needed to take some notes on certain aspects of this, especially the information on the budgets by department and some of the other summaries, but I can give anybody a copy of this that would like a copy of the whole thing.
Just for a quick clarification, general fund contingency and the beach money, how much was that from last year's budget?
Last year, the contingency was a little over $130,000,
right.
And the transfer was $50,000.
Okay, so this budget already ate $180,000.
Correct.
Okay. I'm ready.
Okay, I don't want to get stuck on this because this is kind of the end, but I'm putting it at the beginning. But just so you have an idea where we stand, I mean, it's everything is balanced with a lot of different variables involved, but except for the general fund. And the reason that's about $129,000 short right now is primarily because of what I put in the comments, that it includes the proposal by the fire department for 4 new full-time employees and the police department for 1 full-time position. And we're going to cover that. Each department head's going to go through and why those things are necessary. So this is just kind of high-level summary. Water and sewer, again, Sonny's going to cover a lot of the things here, but he has some significant projects, and that's why in the comments section I talk about some fund balance appropriation to balance this, because of a major project, in addition to some other capital projects that need to be done that we talked about in the past using funds from the Sewer Expansion Reserve Fund. So those things are included in this budget to make it balance. Also, same with the Stormwater Fund. There's a significant transfer, so then as fund balance appropriation for the project that Sonny is getting started in the Interior Beach Village. And then finally, the SERP Fund, I mean, that's kind of the impact of transferring funds from the water and sewer that I talked about previously. But this is kind of a high level, and we need to then step back and go into the detail and understand why we are where we are. And I thought that this is actually, just very quickly, I thought it might be useful to show by fund the percentage plus or minus we are in comparison to the budget that was approved for last year, or this current year, I should say. So you see most funds are up. Some things really stick out. Again, we talked about Sewer Expansion Reserve Fund, which is outrageous, but it's just because we're taking some money out for some of the projects. So.
So the water, the school water, and sewer expansion are all really driven by capital, is that correct?
That is correct.
So not by staffing, the general fund is really by staffing.
The general fund is really, it's staffing, primarily staffing, and a couple capital expenditures for equipment that are fairly significant. So what I get, I think the next page I gave you really starts by department, and I guess that goes into then the next part of the agenda, really, where it's really each department head or department representative will kind of walk through their budget. What I've done and what this is a very, again, high-level summary. It just kind of explains the ups and downs, the significant ups and downs for each department, and that's handed out a copy of this, and that's what's in the significant changes column on the far right.
So
So, you know, from here, I'll really let each department head walk through what they're requesting.
Good.
Unless anybody has any other questions.
Sounds good.
I think our first one was in, but I'm gonna yield to Sonic, so he needs to get, so, to get out of here. So.
Yeah, my mother-in-law sent me to surgery and I'll be there.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, so.
Thank you.
So what I'll, Sonny's a little different, you know, he has three funds that he covers, so this first part, and I'll kind of flip back and forth as needed, Sonny, so the streets and sanitation, that is on page, this page number's under handouts on page 7. I don't know if you want to start with general fund or some water store. But.
The streets and sand's fine with me.
Okay.
You have it listed first.
Okay.
Does everybody have those? They don't.
No, I okay. Yeah, all
you, my, we're just talking.
Yeah, all they have are, yeah, the breakdown, which is kind of like in total and what the significant changes are.
Right. Well, the significant changes are basically the maintenance of building. We went up on that about $10,000. That's 550 15. That's going to be doing some maintenance on the town. I hopefully have some money for maintenance on the town hall painting. Not sure that will cover it all. If it don't, we'll have to figure something out. But anyway, and we'll leave it up to somebody to pick out the color.
So how much maintenance on town hall? What kind of maintenance?
I have around $13,000.
Or the rotten wood and stuff.
We'll be replacing the rotten wood. We'll do the boxing and whatever. But this is basically any repairs on the before painting. If that's not a big enough number, we'll have to get somebody to come in and take a look at it, give us a price or whatever.
And that's just town hall and
apartment. That's right. I have some money in the other one. Yeah, that's just town hall. You have any more questions?
So that is what painted the outside of town hall?
Yes, ma'am. Okay. Yeah, the inside's already been done.
Yeah. That's right.
Capital.
Does that include this building too, son?
Yes, sir.
This building?
We have money for the outside of this building.
All right.
Too.
Very good.
Capital outlay of equipment, 74. There's a big, that's a garbage truck, the new garbage truck that we have. We purchased one every 5 years. Mm-hmm. And that's what the increase right there is.
Do we get anything for, do we like trade in or sell it or something, the old one? Or?
We have gotten rid of one.
Right.
Now we have to pretty much keep them because the way we have to treat our debris.
Okay.
You know, we have to.
So you turn it into a debris truck,
yeah, right,
at the end of 5 years?
That's right. Capital outlay purchase of a truck, that's 35 increase right there. And that's pretty much the increases that we have in the general fund.
So
the rest of them are pretty close to the same as last year.
So Arlen, Sonny, whichever one feels this around. So the two biggest that's shown in here is really the increase in personnel costs, that's the COLA and merit, that's
right,
where that is. And then the other one is just the purchase of the two trucks is the two big increase, at least how you show it.
Right, not too far behind. It's like what Sonny was saying.
Well, I'm looking at salaries. The increase in, I mean, I don't see that much difference in those numbers that you just said, the COLA and whatever.
Yeah. I'm just asking the big impact, the big drivers of this one is the garbage truck and service truck and then the salaries.
That's the big drivers is the equipment.
Okay.
And on that summary, when I say personnel-related costs, that's the the salary increase, the taxes, the benefits.
It's everything. Yeah.
Okay, but anyone have any questions on this? And if everybody looks through there, if they have any questions, please pick up the phone, call me. I'll be glad to answer any questions on the individual line items. But those are the big numbers that we're changing.
And I'll throw that out for all departments. If anybody wants to see an individual line item budget, I mean, it is available. In the past, that hasn't been the case, but it is available if anybody wants to see it. So.
Okay, water and sewer. And the biggest driving numbers as far as expenditures, differences in that. We have a maintenance of system, I went $5,000 on it. Maintenance of building equipment, that's where I put, I went up about, I went $23,000 in that, I went up $11,000, that's mainly for the exterior of this building and the ex, or vice versa on that.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, the vice versa on that, the 13 was the best and the.
Right, yeah, you kept.
Yeah, the general fund, yeah.
Right.
But the numbers would be this, basically the same as far as amounts. Maintenance of equipment, like I said, I went up equipment and building. That's that from 12 to 23. Capital outlay of improvements, that's where the big number is, 300,000, from 92 to 300,000. And that includes the 500,000 for the lift station, which hopefully will get done next year.
And let, I'm just going to interrupt for the actual lift station project, we'll see later, Joe, but it's because it's not in this budget at all. It's going to be a separate capital project budget. So the only way, the only reflection in this budget that you're looking at now is that we're going to transfer $50,000 from into the capital project fund to kind of get that project started.
Okay, so the way you're doing it is you're taking all these capital projects and putting them into different
except places. For the bypass, you had a sewer
and the lagoon.
And the lagoon.
Okay. So that's
all in here.
Right. Yeah. The bypass is 175, the lagoon's 125. So that's where the 300,000 comes in.
Okay.
So the lift station, you'll be doing that next fiscal year?
I hope so.
Thank you.
That's our plan. treatment, Carolina Beach treatment. Yeah, that's only do the figures on that, and I'm sure he's exact on that. And no, but anyway, it's an increase of $32,000
yeah.
on that. So he can probably tell you better how he came up with that.
Well,
and
that, sorry to interrupt. That one, if they use more, they pay more because of fees, so it'll work itself out, right?
Right, hopefully.
Yeah. Assuming we set the fee right, we might have to look at that. But
right.
Okay, and if they use less, okay.
Yeah, I mean, this was basically my best guess based
yeah.
on new rates.
So your awful revenues is expenditures, but they both go fine. Okay.
And I'm hoping that with some of the capital improvements that we're going to be doing,
yeah.
this is going to help change oh. this next year.
Yeah. Basically turning that
number
go
down
yeah.
a little bit.
Yeah.
Stormwater fund. Oh, anybody have any questions on that?
Well, that was another one for council, right? So one of the things that in the May meeting y'all want us to talk about is communicating to our citizens that they, at least all the rentals, but even the regular homes should put external showers so that the water they use to shower off the beach doesn't go into the sewer when you pay Carolina Beach to treat it. Definitely the rentals, I think we should push them hard that they should be using external because we're peaking out during the summer months on the weekends. And we don't want to be peaking out because long term, that means we'll be buying capacity at Carolina Beach that we shouldn't have to buy. So I think that's another one where I think council can do some stuff. Direct people, hey, you know, you should do this. I think there's really three things. One, rental properties make outside showers and encourage their all their people, the 50 people who are staying in the house, to use the external shower because then they go down the sewer. Two is to make sure our full-time residents are aware that, hey, during the summer, if you would change your laundry schedule to the weekdays instead of the weekend, the peak weekends, that would probably help us a lot. And that's just a simple change, people changing their habits. And then three, if you have a lot of beachgoers, you know, if they don't like using the hose, build an external shower because it would help the town. It's not going to help them because we build all their water. So it actually helps us double-wise on spin or on smile, but it would help us long-term prevent a big possible expenditure to buy extra capacity in Carolina Beach. So I think that's going to be on our main agenda to talk about as we flesh it out and how to communicate it. But that's one of those things, Mayor, where I think the council does have some ability to influence some of these things by just communication, right? Guiding people to the right answer. Okay, sorry to interrupt, Tony.
So, can I ask you, given these computerized things you can put on your sprinkler systems that detect whether or not it's raining or has rained and so it doesn't turn on, are they pretty expensive?
I don't think so.
Okay.
No, really, I mean, actually, we have it on the park downtown.
I don't think they are. Okay. You're talking about individual property entities?
Yeah, maybe you guys could help me find out what the average cost is or typical cost.
I'm not as concerned about that as far as a town level. I mean, I don't want to be using the water or our domestic water for that, but we get paid good money for that. So, I mean, anything we can do to reduce that'd be great. But
thinking about conservation in general.
Well, that's great on the water side. It's not affecting us on the sewer side.
Yeah, I have at least one, if not three, neighbors who they're out of town, and their sprinklers run every single day in pouring down rain.
And sometimes ours does, but we get a call very quickly. But to give you a look, as far as our capacity on the sewer, David is very correct that on some of our big weekends in July, we are pushing the limit on our daily capacity at the plant. But luckily, everything is based on as far as with the state is on a monthly and yearly basis. So we're still well below the capacity numbers, and so I don't want y'all to get the wrong impression that we're pushing capacity at the plant in Carolina Beach.
Yeah, and I didn't imply that to anyone, but I think that if some citizens would do something smarter to help us financially and keep us away from that, because Carolina Beach, you saw their $57 million. They're willing to spend money, it seems like, and I don't want them dragging us with them, right? And they will try to. Mm-hmm. That's part of the way it works. And I understand that, and Jim and I and Sonny and Andy will make sure they don't drag us, but anything we can do just makes it better for us, right?
That's right.
And you know, we pay them a lot of money. We pay a minor amount in overage, because we get billed for our overage by the day. But it wasn't significant dollars. It may have been $2,000 or $3,000 last year. But it would be better if it was zero. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
And I think council can inform some people and encourage some people to do some different stuff that will fix it. Because I firmly believe that if you told people to don't wash on the weekends, the majority of them would be like, well, tell me why. If you told why, they'd be like, wow, okay, I can probably do it Thursday night. Because all the houses that are turned over have to do it Saturday, because they're checkout Saturday.
Right.
So every real house does laundry Saturday.
Oh, I thought you were talking about showers.
No, well, the outside showers are Saturday. No, I want people to take showers as much as they need to.
I was going to say, I only take one Thursday.
But they can take them outside, right?
Yeah.
Nice, Sonny.
The way we pay for our sewage is self-use. Is that what
you're trying to say? Yeah, we do. Some of it is fixed costs where we pay for a certain amount of capacity, and then the rest is on how much we set up there.
So
those two pieces.
So it does behoove the citizens to save the town money, therefore their money.
That's right. Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
It's just more communication.
That's right.
Okay.
Okay. Let's go to stormwater. Changes in that is the minor equipment. I think we went up $3,000 on that. Buying a pump, capital outlay equipment. Let's see, this we have a half a backhoe in there, which is 62.5, which we increased to about 22,000 in that line item.
How does half a backhoe work?
Not halfway.
The other half of that is in the water and sewer
fund. And then the $400,000, the transfer out for the capital project,
project, so the only impact on this budget is, like Sonny said, to transfer out to and I've actually increased that. I think last year we were talking about this project too, and I had a smaller amount that I suggested we transfer and raise that to like $400,000. Because I think we've built the stormwater fund balance up enough that we can support that, you know, and we just get out of financing.
That's
all
the last one.
So, in rounding this thing out, the biggest cost is the capital projects that we're doing and some equipment that we had in our 5-year capital plan that we're purchasing. So, the other line items are pretty much the same.
One question for you, Sonny, is how do you look against your current budget right now? Are you at 100% where you expect to be, or are you running behind your budget, or are you running ahead of your budget?
Well, it's important. Some of the numbers in there are on projects that we haven't done.
Uh-huh.
Those are the big number differences. You'll see that we haven't spent, I think some of them look kind of,
right. Yeah.
You know.
You got some line items that are over, some are under. I think, you know, in total, I think he's fine.
Just you about 100%. I'm just trying to see how he's. I know the biggest expenses are like facing him.
Yeah, pretty much everything looks good, and most of my items except the project, the big numbers, projects have changed.
And the other line items are pretty consistent.
And there's some that's going to be a little bit over here and there, but it's not.
What we budgeted for the Carolina Beach treatment facility, that may be over, but because the rate increased a little more than we anticipated, and that was retroactive back to July 1st. So there's, you know, a couple of things, but overall, I think it's
okay.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, on your 5-year plan, does this budget keep it where you had it last year, or do you pull stuff in or push stuff out on
there was just the one project that was planned on doing this current fiscal year, I think, which was the water line.
The water line, we were going to put that off this coming year, and I've got to do some more engineering thinking on that, and
which water line?
The small one in between blocks. But plan is to go into the areas that have caused the problems, which is a couple of isolated areas, and what Jimmy's plan is in isolated areas is to take and hand dig, and we're going to lay some PVC pipe where the old lines are and re-tap it. So at least that'll give us a little bit of time and hopefully not cause.
So is that the two blocks B and G between 421 and 3rd Street? Is that the one you're talking about, or the next block?
Yes, it is.
Okay, that's the people that came in concerned about the water line problems to council.
We have about a 2-block area, and it's kind of an isolated area that we have the problems in. So hopefully we can't get any equipment back there.
That's
so
right.
It all have to be hand dug. Plan to do that.
Good. I'm sure they'll appreciate it, maybe not in the short term, long term.
Yeah.
And there's some of the funders will for sure. So that's good.
Yeah.
And that's going to happen this spring or?
Well, hopefully, I know Jimmy don't have anything else to do.
That's wise.
Instead, we have a couple of stormwater projects that we've got underway and we're going to be doing. And I think after that, he'll probably get
That's awesome. No, that's good. No, I'm sure those residents will appreciate it. I don't know. I haven't heard they've had any
Last.
Yeah, but they have for having the next one.
It's
going to
happen.
Yeah, okay, thanks. Good.
May I ask, all the digging that's going on back behind here, behind the fire station, and all those big ditches, are we doing that, or is Sunny Point doing that, or?
We're doing that. We cleared the ditch going out to the river right beside the town hall. We cleared all that. And we're clearing the ditch, the old Hemicus ditch running behind Purdy's Village. We're taking out all the trees and stuff that's thrown on the right of way, so we can get a piece of equipment and start cleaning that. process. It'll take a couple of months before we get that one down there completed, but that was completed all the way to the river. So.
Okay. Thank you.
I should say Jimmy is getting all that.
You're busy.
Anybody have any questions? Other questions for Sonny at this point? I'm going to head on.
Good luck, Sonny.
Good luck, Sonny. You go back.
So Arlen, that's all right. Well, they may know. I'm not sure who knows. So the LEO separation allowance tax is 786%. Is that they have more retirees, or they change the policy now? Okay. Just for interest. Because I don't keep control of it.
Yeah. Wow.
Yes,
what
was that? Yeah, that's my separation.
Oh, okay. There you go. That's fine then, never mind, okay. We're gonna pay that. I just wanted to, so I thought it was driven, I just didn't know if they changed the program or if it's because we had a big return. I understand.
Okay. And that is a, right now we just pay for one employee that's retired, that's a head. We pay a small amount and we have for a couple of years.
I think Tommy and all the rest of them, is it a different program or?
No.
So it's only until you, okay.
Yeah, from, that stops at 62.
Okay. That's fair.
Okay, now 6.1% increase for them, and 3.9 and 3.6 is that because public works is split up into different funds? Or?
It's because I was on one new position.
Yeah.
So that's
so
what
I gives you all of that.
The starting point for every all department was 2% COLA, 2%
the other change is 36K, 36.6, the increase in part time taxes. Is that above what we spent last year or this year? Mm-hmm. And if we add another full time position, do we still need to increase that by that much? Or is that your view?
Our thought was, the chief retired, is that looking at putting him back on part time, if everybody in the room put it, and that would be the maximum you could earn. I think it's $34,000, so with taxes and all that.
Okay, so that's, yeah, understood.
So you'll be doing what you're doing right now, or you won't be getting the phone calls?
Well,
before the money.
Yeah, the money. That's entirely a council decision and my decision. I'm good either way, and I'm not going to be upset if the council decides against that. It's, I can go either way with that.
But you're not coming back as a volunteer.
Well, I kind of can't do that. If Chapel Hill would let my daughter go to college for free, I would be happy to be a volunteer. But it's up to you. My role will be strictly IT, dealing with body cams, car cams, IT issues, keeping our forensic lab running, helping in any other way I could as far as media relations, public relations, that kind of thing. But, either way, I can only work maybe things like 19 hours a week, something like that, or whatever rate. Like, the 34,000 is the maximum, and it doesn't have to be that. It's
could you do a short version of the rundown on how the new personnel, if you get them, would help the staff?
Sure. You want me to do
that? No, a new person, if we do need a new person, we're going to use them as a drug investigator primarily. I think we've had, I don't know how many we've had as far as drug overdoses in the past. Carolina has had several. We've started carrying a Loxone on them, which is a, it changes. If they use heroin, it combats it. That would help us as far as the narcotics problem we have. Carolina Beach has just added another one. We could hopefully work hand in hand with them to combat our problem and their problem, and hopefully put another person on the street to help us. But certain times we're going to have one officer on the street, which is just not safe. It's crazy. But we're doing the best we can with what we have, and just really like to get more people.
So would that be a detective then?
Yes.
Okay.
Would he be mainly days?
No. He would work primarily whenever he needed to work.
The concept is that, you know, you can't separate Carolina and Curie Beach when it comes to crime and narcotics or anything else for that matter. It's we're one community. So they have an officer there dedicated toward that. And it's driven by, it's called intelligence led policing. So we actually target known people and work toward that to reduce narcotics. It's not just something that's kind of right around look for. It's driven by leads and intelligence, and there's a target, and that's where we're going. So we would have a guy working that, and they would have at least one guy working that, and we would work together as a very small task force. Be supported by their other staff, be supported by our other staff. But they would either be, or not, those two guys would be working toward that end.
Okay, I mean, that makes sense. Let me ask you a selfish question.
Sure.
For our town, for the moment. When we forget something in drugs, we build our federal, right? As we recovery equipment, we build our federal grant money for police support, right?
I'm not sure I'm following that.
I forget the
asset forfeiture money.
Sorry?
Asset forfeiture money? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, asset forfeiture money, right? So, thank you. So, the asset forfeiture money, if we're working as one task force, do we share that? Or is it only if somebody's busted in Curie Beach we get it? So it's busted.
As far as narcotics related stuff, I would say the chances are not greatly high that we would recover any significant amount of money or property in narcotics. Occasionally you pick up a vehicle or you may pick up a little bit here and there. That's not a, we're not on 95 or I-10 where we're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars being moved in a vehicle. We're talking about fairly low level heroin dealers, meth dealers, and prescription pill. Our concern is we haven't had, knock on wood, an overdose fatality in years. We've had, in the last 6 months, I can count at least a half a dozen where it's been borderline on one, and leading up to defib, overdose guy. They had a nice long one, he came back around, believe it or not. So we've been close.
Okay, fighting drugs, they ended up big or small, it's
Transportation Act. It's something we're looking at pretty hard. I have two detectives now that split, and if you really think about it, two is not a lot. You know, you got one working, one's off, one's on vacation, the other one's having to cover for that, or one of us. I got to throw this in, but I think that at the level of service we give our citizens in any investigation is, in my opinion, greatly above and beyond average. So if we take a report from you as a victim, we don't take a report and file and go, man, it's too bad. We're going to chase it to the end of the earth. And I think you all have seen that, and I'm sure there's other people in the community who attest to that. So we go to great pains to try to figure out how to help you fix what's wrong. So it's just that's the level we'd like to provide. Having a third would be sweet. My detectives also serve as patrol guys, going short, work the concerts, do other things. So it's not that they're just full time. That's all they have to worry about. So,
okay. Still, do you foresee any change in the Blue Clay Road problem anytime in the near future?
Absolutely not. No. I don't ever see it. That may change later on down the road in another whole county administration scenario or something, but not anytime soon. No. Like what is referred to is the fact that if we arrest someone here, we have to go to Carolina Beach, call the magistrate, wait there until the magistrate arrives, do paperwork, and then transport to Blue Clay Road and back. So 3 o'clock in the morning, it's not that bad of a turnaround, but on a day shift or a evening shift on a weekend, that guy's gone for 4, 5, 6 hours. If you only have two on, you've lost one for half a shift. He's referring to a lockup, maybe you're at an open junction or some southern point where we could drop off people we arrest in that kind of thing. But we're so used to that now that it's just part of our, we're just used to it.
May I weigh in on that?
Yep.
Because you know me, I can't keep my mouth shut. So I asked the sheriff about it, and he said that there absolutely is no way they're going to put a lockup there at Monkey Junction. He said the biggest issue is a liability issue for both of us. If we were to leave someone there and something happened to them, not to mention the cost, expense, and everything. Plus, I didn't know that at Wilmington, at their police department there on Nixon, they have a lockup which they don't use. And they have no intentions of using it because of the very same issues.
Well, you have to have a certified jailer. I mean, there's certification programs for the jailer and detention officers. So it's not, you can't just hire a custodian. So there's a lot more to it. That's the sheriff. Honestly, that's his biggest job, is maintaining the jail. Okay. Really. That's his biggest liability.
Really, it would be nice if we had one or two more officers to help us out.
Well, we're asking for one. So we're right at the end of the day, and we know money is money, and there's a limit on everything. We're doing okay. We're getting by, but as I've told the council before, we're not flying, but it's very hard for us to train, take any time off during the summertime. It's just, it's a Chinese puzzle. If somebody gets out, you got to rearrange everything to make it work for that week or 2 weeks. So it's a challenge.
It certainly makes you pick where you need to focus your enforcement.
Well,
frivolous enforcement removes an officer for 6 hours. That doesn't make any sense.
Well, we do that all the time. My patrol guys and supervisors make conscious decisions on the fly now. Do we take this from the jail or put him back in bed? I hate to use that analogy, but it's not really that. That's an analogy. We're trying to work it out and resolve it another way. Without not protecting the victim's expectation of service or life. takes overtime. It just takes too much manpower. One domestic, one traffic accident, one about anything will tie up. Either 75% of my guys or all of them for a period of time. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, we work really well with Carolina Beach. The new chief up there, go back a ways, and so that bridge is repaired and we're good. We're sharing some resources and starting to work together on some things, which is a big help. They back us up on a regular basis, and we do the same for them. So that's really been good.
So if you arrested somebody for DWI or DUI, you'd have to take them all the way out to Blue Flag?
It depends. It just depends. Just a little bit of kind of unwritten rules. We have zero tolerance policy on DWI, domestic violence, and narcotics. So if you do one of those three things, the officers really have no choice in their actions. They're going to put you in or arrest you. Anything else that comes up, officers have discretion. If we arrest you and take you to Carolina Beach City Magistrate, depending on what the magistrate orders, we'll decide whether we take you to Blue Flag or not. If they release you with no bail or unsecured bond and you have a ride, we'll call them today and out there and you go back home, whatever. If they put a bond on you, a secured bond, and it can't be posted on the spot, then Blue Flag will. If you're local, a known local person, and it's a misdemeanor, generally they'll let you go on your own cognizance, so there's no transport. So
you keep driving home?
No.
Somebody
will pick you up, make arrangements. We'll facilitate it. We're not going to stay on the street, we'll facilitate it, but we're not a taxi service, try not to put that business. I'll bring you in, Dr. Mayor.
Yeah, let's just not do that then. All right.
One other question, dealing with people with disabilities.
Yes.
Do you ever get in a situation where you really need to take them to the hospital or
yes.
Turn them off?
Yes.
Is that just as time consuming or more so?
More so. I don't have numbers to support this about that, I'm sure I can figure it out, but we tend to get a lot of mentally ill folks that we deal with down here. I think a lot of it is just the fact that I-40 ends here. If you get on I-40 in Barstow, California, and stay in the right hand lane, you end up in Curie Beach. That's the truth. So it's Alzheimer's patients, dementia patients, I can't even count them. The ones that we get here, we end up keeping in our office for sometimes up to 6 or 8 hours while our relatives from as far away as Tennessee. Last year we had someone from Tennessee that ended up here. Went out the door to buy a gallon of milk, ended up in Curie Beach 12, 15 hours later with 3 gallons of milk. And didn't know how to get home. So put them in our office, and the fire department's not here, but they've been gracious. They help us watch those people too if we're busy, and feed them, take care of them until family gets here. Others, yes, we do transport to New Hanover. Ties up my guy most of the day because we have to sit there with him in the waiting room just like a normal patient and wait to be seen by a psychiatrist or an MD. And whatever happens, happens from there. It does happen. Hospital police are generally pretty good to us because they know we're very small and have a lot of folks. So if they're not too busy, they'll sometimes release and we can get back home.
Chief, you said DUI, domestic violence, and something else with zero
tolerance.
Sorry,
narcotics.
Okay.
Well, when I say narcotics, let me clarify. So, there's no miscommunication. If it's a misdemeanor charge, that's a citation or a traffic citation, and that's that. But nonetheless, there's an enforcement action. There's no to worry about it.
Got it.
We have 11 full-time people. Is that right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And compared to other towns our size, I mean, we're about, we're definitely understaffed. years ago, I guess, I think, Atlantic Beach got really close to us. I think they had like 18 guys or something like that. At that time, we had 10.
And still, Mike, for retention and recruiting, you still feel comfortable where we're at as far as getting people to come to the department and as far as keeping the guys you want to keep, right?
Well, yeah, yeah, oh yeah.
Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think we have to worry too much about that at all. We're just blessed. And part of that's good, you know, also, you know, it's right. You take care of your people here. That's the word. I mean, it's the place to be, don't you? So,
it's important.
And, you got some really, really good guys that are super invested in town. It's just a unique thing. So, great problem.
I guess if there's no other questions for the police department, I guess we'll move on to the fire department. Which I think is in the hands of Jim today. So, and the increases, I guess, can pretty much be summed up for a fire department, can be summed up as personnel related. And there might be a few other miscellaneous things in there, but bottom line, it's, you know, personnel related. So I think that's something that Jim is going to cover on behalf of the fire department. And
I've been asked to give the presentation for the fire department because the chief is on vacation and the assistant chief who did the majority of the work that you're going to see is at the National Fire Academy for a two-week course. And that, I would add, is something that's very rare and exceptional for a town of our size and a department of our size. So he is either very good or very lucky or a combination of both to be able to find a slot at the National Fire Academy. There's a handout that's been given to you that is going to be the same thing as what you're going to see up on the stage. Basically, the problems that we're having in the fire department, no, please.
Okay.
That's way too technical.
Okay. Just nod, not well. Move it to the next one.
And this is also problems that are nationwide. There's very few departments that are like ours, which are either totally volunteer or half volunteer. That don't have these same problems. Obviously you need, with fire departments, you need the firemen there as quickly as possible that you can get them. The best way to do that is with full-time people, time jobs. You need them on a 24-hour basis. And what the staffing that we have right now with our five full-time people is 12 hours during the day that are guaranteed full-time people.
I thought we had 6 full-time people. I thought we had 3 and then approved 3 additional positions.
Yeah,
so we weren't counting the chief.
Yeah. And it's an issue. These are the three main problems that we've got. Volunteerism, basically giving people to be firemen, the legal issues that are involved with fire departments, both on the state, local, and federal level, and what we see is a problem with the future.
They have 5 full-time.
Including the chief.
Yes.
And then the part-time.
Right. Well, so there was just one person that counts as part-time, which was
Wayne Boston.
Full-time is
part-time.
One that will consider part-time is one that I said. And then full-time, including the chief, is 5.
So we have 5 and a half. so you have full, four positions that are filled right now, and you're looking for it?
No, we have five.
Time is possible.
So, okay, so.
You just tell my volunteers dropping.
For call throughout the day, we've got low response level because most of the people outside of our full-time workers are people that are employed elsewhere, and most of them not on the island. And one of our problems that we have is probably well over half of the people that we have in the volunteer fire department don't even live on the island, much less in town. And multiple calls at once are a significant potential problem. We haven't really run into the problem very often, but it's going to have to flow. It has happened.
Okay.
See?
Does this reflect EMS as well?
Yes.
Is this fire and EMS?
No, this is fire and EMS. We're a dual fire department.
EMT?
But,
EMT or
EMS? Well, EMS is emergency medical services.
Yeah.
We respond to medical calls. EMT is the level of certification for the people that respond. So the calls throughout the day are going to get the two full-time people, and when that happens, we've got a request into our volunteers that if it's a fire, that they respond. If it's an EMS call, that they respond to the station so that the station can demand if and when another call comes in while the main crew is out. And that's the multiple calls at once. Calls at night.
Jim?
Yes, ma'am.
On the multiple calls, are the majority of them EMS calls?
Yes. You can. It's a nationwide average that for every three calls, two of them are going to be EMS and one's going to be fire.
How many of our guys, if any, are trained EMTs?
We have 9 trained EMTs.
Okay.
All of our full-time people are EMT trained.
And so any additional people, that would be one of the requirements?
Yes.
Here's one of our big problems. We have 9 EMTs. There will be 2 EMTs, if they're on duty, the paid guys that respond. Of those 9 EMTs, there's only one other EMT that is on the island. Yours truly. So, when I go to the station, technically, legally, and shouldn't go outside this room, if there's an EMS run, we shouldn't respond, because there's only one EMT, but there should be 2. But we do, because we have the availability of Carolina Beach to back us up.
But that's for hiring new personnel, that's something.
Well, that's also training.
Yes. Okay.
Which I'll get into. And
are any of our police officers EMTs?
We had one with the sense going somewhere else. And we actually had 2 volunteers and another one has all that.
So we don't have any
at the moment.
Okay.
But to answer your question, the full-time hiring policies of the fire department is they would have to be EMT certified.
Mm-hmm. They
have to be firefighter 1 or 2 and EMT or they wouldn't be hired.
Those are the minimum requirements for the state of North Carolina.
Right. Yes, sir. Any full-timer will fill that.
And I'm sure we will, but we shouldn't be hiring anybody that doesn't already have those.
Right.
And then you incur the additional cost of training the person. And we do have mutual aid agreements with everybody in the county, but obviously the one that counts the most is Carolina Beach. We respond for working fires, the majority of working fires to them, and they respond to the majority of working fires with us in
During the summertime, New Hanover County typically stations an EMS unit on the island in the summertime, but in the wintertime, it could be all the way across the county before Gaffney.
So it's not even on the other side of the bridge at that
not
station?
Not necessarily. It's
usually a monkey, just going for monkey jumps.
Right.
And I would say that probably, I don't know about Carolina Beach, but I would say the majority, well, close to 50% of our calls, that one of the reasons for the call is because EMS is so far away.
Right.
And they want somebody there with the patient to assess, see what the problem is, and do something until EMS arrives. Okay. This is one of the reasons that we're having trouble getting volunteers. The cost of living in Carey Beach, for one. It's not the, it's a beautiful place to be, but it costs money to live here. Especially if you're of the age that we're mainly looking for volunteer firefighters. The fact that we have a resident grouping that is relatively old. Trust me, relatively old. But the majority of our people are at the end of their work life or retirees. So that's not the kind of person that, if they haven't been involved in it before, that are all of a sudden going to wake up and say, boy, I'd really like to be a volunteer firefighter. And the caliber of current and working potential volunteers, they already have lives. And because of the work that they do to earn a living and the qualifications that are required by the state and federal government, it's tough trying to squeeze in baseball games with the kids and stuff like that. So it's something that you're really giving a lot of your time, because there's nothing scheduled outside of the regular training sessions. You go when the paper goes up. Just like what happened here a minute ago. Okay.
I'm going to ask a really crazy question, because I'm sitting here
there
looking.
There are no crazy questions.
Just crazy people. I'm sitting here looking at Jimmy. Have we ever thought about training our public works guys to be EMTs?
There was some discussion when I was on council before, and it's been done or talked about other places in the United States. It's never really either caught on or worked out, because if he's in the middle of a hole because there's a water line broke and a pager goes off, what does he do? Drop the shovel and stop turning off the water to the 300 houses that are leaking, or does he stay there and look at the smoke rising three blocks away? Or somebody who's driving the garbage truck. And does he drive the garbage truck to the fire station and stop picking up garbage? It just hasn't been very compatible.
So the other thing is the training requirements keep going up. So to be a volunteer fireman in the 90s, it was less than 40 hours. Now I think it's 80 to 120 hours a year of training. So for you to get public works to do that, you're basically saying we're going to lose 3 weeks of work for every public works person we train to do that.
Minimum.
And then you get into Harlan and tell you, you have a pay issue now because public works, the pay scale for public works versus the fireman is different, so what are you going to do with that? So there's a lot of other issues that come in. Same thing on the other side, where some places do public safety and have their police officers trained as firemen. You get into the same issues. Their training requirements are going up, at the same time, fire department training requirements are going up. So I think Jim's going to talk about the next one, and the legal issues. I think Maury's going to talk about pay issues than the training issues. But the training, part of this drop right here, not living in Carey Beach, but volunteerism dropping down, is driven by the fact that the training requirements, because the professional firefighters are pushing the legislatures and the insurance companies to ramp up the training, I think. I mean, I'm a cynic right now, like you.
Well, the insurance companies are
But so honestly, you know, to be a volunteer now, a volunteer firefighter compared to when I started in the mid-90s, the training is crazy, you know. I want Matt to be one, my son, but I don't know that he's going to dedicate all the time to ever do it. I mean, I hate to say that because it'll be the fourth generation that should be a career volunteer fireman, but, you know, one is probably going to move away. But even if he doesn't, I don't know that he'll ever devote the time to become a volunteer fireman.
I also see the whole culture changing.
Right.
I lived in the mountains and
yeah.
All we had were volunteer fire departments, but the families were very involved in the departments.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the mothers and the kids, you had junior firemen, you had everything, and their whole life centered around the fire department. And the young people today, I see them more family-oriented at home.
Yeah.
This slide shows the number of firefighters that live in Kerry Beach, which is dropping dramatically, and will the bottom really is looking to fall out within the next couple of years with the age group that we've got that we'll be losing. And that's why. They're coming from off the island, and basically you can't consider somebody who lives off the island responding, because by the time they get there, the situation's either gotten totally out of hand or there was no reason to come anyway. You need somebody there. Our response time is 3 to 5 minutes per run. And if you're off the island, especially during the summer, you maybe limit to 20 minutes before you can just get to the fire station, much less to the location. And that's our turnout for people that come for both day and night shift. The day shift is the blue line. And the reason that it's dropped is, again, because of people that live in town, being the only ones who can basically respond to something that's not prearranged. It'd be great if we could organize our fires that you're only allowed between the hours of 3 and 5 a.m. Okay. The smaller the amount of firefighters that live in Kerry Beach, the less firefighters have on the scene in a timely manner. And like I said, we need them the most. They're not trained to a medical responder level, should respond to the scene of medical calls, so they've been asked to come to the station to take whatever fire calls may come in during that time that the other firefighters are out of service. And compared to our roster size, that's the number of people that show up. And it's not because people don't want to and are lazy. It's availability. 90% of it is availability, either location or work or something like that. So it's not that we've got people that are on it just so that they can have a uniform to wear. They're willing to do the work, but it has to be within their lifestyle.
Jim, for slots on the line, for government purposes, how many volunteers equal one full time?
There is no equal.
I mean, well, I think for the ISO stuff,
right? It's 4 to 1. Okay.
And, right, Jim? For the rating agency, when you're talking about ratings, they say, at least that's what Dad's always told me, 4 to be assumed equivalent for staffing purposes when the insurance, in I said looking at this.
Oh, okay, I thought you were talking about how many volunteers does it take to replace a full-time
or a light bulb. No.
I mean, if I had to do this myself for government purposes, where they come up with this.
So for the rating agencies to rate our department and determine are we sufficiently staffed to make sure we're getting good insurance rates for our citizens is 4-1.
So, like the department that I came from was fully paid. For every 3 firemen you hire, you have to hire an additional fireman to keep one person working on each shift because of vacation days and potential sick days and injury days and stuff like that.
So for staffing, so there's a couple of things to consider. One is, can we meet the needs of the community? That's what it is trying to address with the people being on the fire scene. The second one is, can we meet the requirements of the rating agencies so that we continue to have low fire insurance rates to the citizens? Because if you remember, when we got re-rated in 2000, I was off council like 5 or 6, we went from 7 to 5. And that drop to the citizens for most people was like $300 or $400 a year in fire insurance.
So as much as $600.
Right. The businesses, I think, was even higher. And so as council, we gotta be aware of both things, right? We definitely want the fire department to be able to meet the citizens' needs. We also wanna make sure we never go back to 7, because all our citizens will be mad when they get their fire insurance rates and they've jumped up by $400 or $500 a year, right? And so, you know, Ed and Dad and Jim should look at both of those issues because they're both equally important, right? Mm-hmm. So if we decide, I think what Ed's saying is we needed to meet the service level of citizens, not the ISO rating. But if the ISO rating never got so strict that it was worthwhile to add one more, even though we thought we were doing final service, we should add that one more so we don't cost all the citizens $400 each a year, mm-hmm. right? Does that make sense, Council?
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Joe and Emily, you know what I'm talking about?
Right.
Okay, I just want to make sure, right? That I told Ed this when we were talking about it. You got to look at two things, right? Because we never want to have to explain to our citizens that we let their fire insurance rates go because we messed up the rating system. Because it's pretty easy to explain that, look, we added another fireman because we're going to keep your policy down. And we never want to have to be defending ourselves because a whole neighborhood burned down because we couldn't put the fire out. We never want to be in either of those places.
No.
Right.
So my only thought there was with volunteerism going down so significantly, adding full time takes pressure off of volunteerism. Right?
Yes.
So I was just trying to make that correlation.
Well, Carolina Beach has got the same problem. The county had the same problem and they took care of it right. in their own individual style by going to full pay. But that's the wave of the future, it seems to be, and the main reason for that being driven is finance-wise and safety-wise. And like NFPA, National Fire Protection Association, that's made up of insurance companies, OSHA is the federal government. They all set standards for firefighters in the United States. Just like they do for some police officers in their working environment, things like that.
Jim, when you say that our roster has increased, the average turnout response has decreased.
That's because,
is that the average time?
That's because of the people that we're getting, the majority of them don't live here.
And so it's so our response time is 75% lower than it used to be. What does that sentence mean?
No, turnout response, which means the number of people that show up.
It is in time. This is decade. Our time is down. So
yeah.
I think we're the fastest last year. Then
there's
we
always
an average number of people
at the call
response.
Yeah. There's always somebody at the fire station.
Right.
During the first 12 hours, it's our full-time people. During the second 12 hours, it's our part-time people that are paid to stay there.
Right.
So there's always minimum of two people on duty at the fire station.
One woman.
Yeah, that's what it's going on.
Do the part-time people have the same training requirements?
Everybody's supposed to have the same training requirements. I'll get into how long it takes to get the requirements shortly. But this is something, part of this is Arlen can address. The NFPA standard 1403, that's a minimum standard training for a firefighter that can enter a burning structure. On your, at the back of your paperwork that you got, there's a list of classes with a list of hours next to them. There are a number of those classes that involve fighting live fires and getting classes on how to be able to read smoke and use your different equipment and everything. Those are supposed to be taught to people before they're able to enter a burning structure. You don't just sign somebody in, swear them in, give them a hose and send them into a burning building. They're supposed to be required to have a certain number of hours of training. The number of hours of training are not easy to get, especially in this county because of some of the training being eliminated a couple of years ago. So it's a matter of getting taught the class or finding someplace else where it's being offered and go to it. The other NFPA 1720 says that there's a minimum of four trained firefighters before initiating putting out the fire. And we've just told you that there's going to be two show up. So they're not going to stand there and do nothing until the next two come. And these are not, if we break the rule of four trained firefighters, the police are not going to come and arrest the firemen for breaking and everything. These are a standard, this is not a law. This is the recommendation of the federal government. If a firefighter would be hurt, or God forbid, killed, and the wife would get an attorney, the town would probably be beat up pretty good because of not living up to the standard. But it's not like it's a hard and fast law that are not allowed to break.
So if you have a burning structure, you have somebody in the structure, two guys show up, they're not supposed to do anything to help that individual according to the standard.
Yes.
Well, that doesn't happen anywhere in the United States.
No, it won't. Not anywhere in the United States.
Right. And we're not the only fire department that has a problem. In probably New Ever County, we're the last one to work on addressing it because the county went to pay guys. Carolina Beach has invested in more. How many paid firemen do you guys have now, John?
There's 10.
Yeah, Bridgeville Beach is 10. Invested. Yeah. Bridgeville Beach is invested. And then Wilmington, of course, is all 100%.
We're so, just the smallest and the last one.
Yeah, we're the last one. But if you go to Pender or Brunswick, we're well ahead of any of those departments. We just happen to be in Rich County and we're the last one, right? If you go inland to like where Dennis is from, they're well, they probably have one paid guy, right? Maybe?
Yeah, it depends on, but yeah, there's several rural.
Right. So there's plenty of rural departments in North Carolina. And then if you go to the deep south, it's way worse. But in North Carolina, where there's no paid guys still, right? And so, you know, it's kind of interesting that the federal and state governments and all these agencies know what's going on, but they continue to make these rules that some communities get boned with, but they're not fixing, right? And so, you know, and we have an assistant chief is going to the class that's telling him all this stuff, and he's like, I know now, I gotta tell the council, right? So he's doing right now.
And then there's a minimum for medical responder certification, which is EMT, which is about 300 hours now to become an EMT. The Department of Labor, I'll leave that up to Arlen to
clear, but it's the other things that we're dealing with and trying to, you know, volunteer versus part-time for, again, you know, labor department requirements, the fact that for the FSLA that you can't be a volunteer and a paid employee in the same department. So a full-time fireman can't serve as a volunteer, you know, when they're off duty, except for, you know, a different jurisdiction, of course, but not in the same town. And then, you know, workers' comp, if someone is considered a part-time employee, the workers' compensation, if they were to be hurt, is based on the part-time wages that they earn, which would, in most cases, for the fire company, would be minimal amount of money. A volunteer, on the other hand, is entitled to a set amount, and I forget what that amount is right offhand, but it's much higher than...
And isn't it based on what full-time employees get?
Yes, it's the same as law enforcement.
Other example of law.
No sense whatsoever.
Yeah, well, this is another one. I mean, so I'll be simple about it, right? Jim can tell me why I shouldn't be simple, because where the option is, right? This is driven by a special interest group, the union's driving to membership. Just like the companies do that in legislature, this is the other side, right? Mm-hmm. Both sides do it, and it's bad on both sides. This is just the other side of it, right? And, you know, I think you could be optimistic and say, well, that's because they really view that the fire service is so critical it should be 100% paid. But if you look at the history of volunteer firefighters, they've done great work. I mean, I've been proud to be one for 20 years, and they're trying to legislate them out.
I've been one longer than you've been.
Yeah, no. I said volunteer. Yeah. So, but we got to respond to it regardless, right? Yeah. It's just one of those things, right?
But the nation started out with 100% volunteer.
Right.
And the vast majority of firefighters in the United States still are volunteers.
That's right.
Well, it's the same problem about the amount from fraud. I mean, I'm friends with our fire chief in my community. They're having the same, almost identical issue. So if they have a paid chief, I think in every department, the county pays for the chief.
Right.
And part of his job is he sits down like at 4:30 or 5 in the afternoon and calls his roster and finds out who's going to be home tonight and who's not.
Right.
And that's kind of how they roll.
Yes.
Well, and that's what Harold does every holiday. Yeah. You know, who's going to be here, who's not going to be here.
We ride on the board this year, Christmas and Thanksgiving and New Year's.
And you really get tired of going through a lot of holidays and not able to drink.
That's right. Yes. Yeah.
And currently we get into the... We're on the border of, you know, is a person a part-time, are they a volunteer, how are they being compensated? We're in a really gray and, you know.
Well, like he was saying, Ed, if Ed was working today and there was a fire this evening and he responded, he wouldn't get paid. Because he's responding and he's not on duty.
Yeah, but he should be getting paid.
But is he salaried or hourly?
Yeah. He should be getting paid.
Is he salaried or
is
hourly?
Is he a salaried employee?
No, he's not salaried.
Is he assistant chief?
He's paid by the hour.
Okay.
And he doesn't supervise anybody.
Yeah.
If he's a supervisor, he should be paid a salary.
He doesn't meet the FLSA exempt.
If he's not being paid overtime, I mean, that would be against the law in the first place. So
that's another issue.
So if he's not a salaried employee, we're going to start paying. So let's make sure the chief and assistant chief are involved in this pay discussion before we get way off track, right? Okay, well, but I'm saying with council, we shouldn't be discussing this specific issue without them here.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's what, Ed, in a couple of years, if there's any questions, basically what you can expect or what our capabilities are in security. If you got a medical call or 80-year-old female complaining and didn't call or breathe, during days, all full-time people, which could be two, are EMT certified. So they're 100% compliant with EMS. during the night shift, there's 40%, on average, they're 40% compliant, because not everybody's an EMT who works nights. Volunteers, only 10% can perform at the medical responder level. That's 10% of our total department. We have 9 EMTs on the department. Volunteers that can perform, they respond to under 10% of the calls. So again, I'm the only one who lives on the island who's not a paid EMT.
Okay, I have a question because this was my neighbor, Matt, Chris's mother, okay? And did it, called it 3 times, okay? Every time he had 2 police officers who went in there and took care of her till the ambulance arrived, all the firemen stood in the cul-de-sac. What is, did we have EMTs a couple of years ago, or what, why were the police officers taking care of her instead of the
police? Police used to respond to EMS. It wasn't always the fire department. That didn't work.
We still do.
We still do. Prior to
it was your main.
Yeah, that was prior, 4 years ago. Fire didn't respond at all. 5 years ago, fire didn't respond to EMS calls. Period. We did. And gradually, fire has been taking that, which to us is a godsend. We're not
having 2 officers in somebody's house.
When defibrillators first hit the fire department, I mean, they were given to the police officer before the fire department happened. Because police officers had responsibility for EMS.
Because we weren't staffed with fire charge
that.
We still carry defibs, but I assure you, we're very happy to see the firemen behind us more than the EMS call. I mean, we've done numerous CPRs. Right. Having fire there with EMTs makes it so much larger and easier. And then we just facilitate anything we do for the family. So we usually beat them there because we're already on the street. We're out somewhere. Usually we beat them there by, not much, maybe 30 seconds to a minute and a half at the most, probably. We do what we can do. The lady in there, we kind of back out or hang in there and help.
Well, a perfect example was the gentleman who was cutting his grass. How many years ago was that?
Oh, Lord. About 10 years now, I guess.
An elderly gentleman cutting his grass has a cardiac arrest in the middle of the front lawn. Sonny happened to be driving by. Sonny is an ex-lifeguard. He jumped out, called 911, started doing CPR. He's lucky to have a dentist who's 2 blocks away. Pulled up, grabbed the defibrillator, charged it up, hit him, once, twice?
Twice, I think, I don't remember.
Got his heartbeat back, and he was at the next council meeting to thank everybody.
Yeah.
And I think the police department went over and finished cutting his grass. Next, please, Ron. And this is
he just doesn't like that slide.
Yeah, I don't know what it
is. What happened to the fire call?
There he is. He's trying. He's pulling too fast.
Throughout the day, the full-timers are trained to NFPA level, which is Firefighter 1 and 2 in North Carolina. Average response time, our average response during the day is 4, which is 2 volunteers along with the 2 paid firefighters, which, again, then meets the requirements. Only 30% of the volunteer firefighters that respond to the majority of calls are trained at the NFPA level. And that is mainly because they have not yet received all the classes that is involved in it.
And just to say that one, so I started the fire service in 1996. It was 2014 when I finished all the classes. Only because they changed requirements. So back then, when I started, they were like, here's all these classes, but they didn't require them, right? Mm-hmm. I had to take 2 classes for sure, and then